This is Radioactive Magazine, a KKFI public affairs program of progressive activism, opinion, and commentary. Opinions expressed on this program are those of the speakers alone and are not necessarily the views of KKFI, its staff, volunteers, board of directors, show hosts, or other guests on the program.
Hello, I'm Mike Nichols, engineer and occasional host for Radioactive Magazine. And I just want to start off the show real quick. As you probably have already heard, it's our spring pledge drive. And so if you enjoy shows like Radioactive Magazine and coming up after us, Counterspin, and other programming that covers like public affairs issues around Kansas City and in our nation, take a moment and donate to us. Phone number is 888-931-0901. Or you can go to our website at www.kkfi.org. Thank you for listening. And for now, I'm going to pass it on over to Kristen Chow, our host for tonight's show.
Thanks, Mike. My name is Kristen Chow, and I'm hosting Radioactive Magazine today. And I have several guests in the studio with me today from One Struggle KC and Una Lucha KC. To my left is Diane Burkholder. And Austin Hoffman is here, as well as Celia Ruiz. Welcome, everybody.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
So there are two organizations represented here today, One Struggle KC and Una Lucha KC. So let's just start off by talking about how each of the organizations got started. When were they funded and founded, and why?
One Struggle KC was founded late October. After community activists had been back and forth to Ferguson and also been involved in activism here in Kansas City, and really got together and just said, what are we going to do here in Kansas City to really uplift the voices of particularly young Black folks, but then also how are we going to talk about Black-Brown solidarity and a coalition building? So from there we started, and 2 days later we had the National Day Against Police Brutality at Bluford Library, and we had 40 people out with 24-hour notice, and it was just an amazing event, and we just kept building from there.
Austin, how did you come to get involved?
Well, I'm a student at UMKC studying sociology, so, you know, from a distance I had been examining social movements and sort of the underlying causes behind them for a while, and when Ferguson happened, you know, it was so close to home, and for me, I just thought that I couldn't, you know, sit in a classroom and just read about these issues in books anymore, and I needed to go and see these things firsthand. And really, that was bringing, you know, the other side of the equation, the real palpable experience of social forces, you know, in action. So, and then it became an extremely personal issue to me. So, and, you know, I went to Ferguson the night of the non-indictment, and then upon returning home to Kansas City a few days later, you know, I just wanted to keep going. I couldn't go back to who I was anymore. So that's how I found the wonderful people at One Struggle in Una Lucha.
So, yeah, how did Una Lucha come into existence?
Well, Una Lucha also became, started in that late October as well. And it was actually in response to some events that occurred in Ayotzinapa, Guerrero, on September 25th and 26th. And so then in having casual conversations with some friends here at One Struggle, we started connecting how that state-sponsored violence was identical as far as what was happening in Ferguson. It's the same thing that's been happening in Mexico. Honestly, I think there was also a little bit of a just... My partner and I were having a conversation and saying, okay, well, you know, what can we do? And trying to brainstorm and say, well, maybe we can do something between us. And we were thinking, you know, maybe we can raise some funds and send something down there and start helping them. But we quickly found out that, you know, money's not the answer. There's a lot of systematic changes that need to take place. So with some folks that had already been with One Struggle, one of our co-founders, Luz, had already taken, organized some actions, I believe, before everything was actually formed with more people.
So what's the connection between the two groups?
I think we started out particularly with One Struggle. We are multiracial. The co-founders are multiracial, Black, and Latino. And I think that we were very intentional about this isn't going to be just one community and having this discussion. And we really need to talk about what are the parallels in our community, because we're all fighting against systems of white supremacy. And what does that look like here in Kansas City, that, you know, a lot of the coalition building happens in silos or is like very fragmented? And what does it look like for young people to be leading that movement and to be able to just join forces?
So sort of drawing connections between struggles being faced by Black people and the Latino community, is that what I'm hearing?
Definitely, and I think with Una Lucha Casey, it's been very beneficial to have One Struggle as our partners in this, because we do have lots to learn. I think we've talked about this before, that we're in a different stage as far as our civil rights activity and movement here in Kansas City. So there's a lot that we're learning from our Black brothers and sisters.
So each of you, what are your roles in the organization? How have you been involved in the organization?
This is Diane. I was co-founder of One Struggle, was involved in activist stuff related here in Kansas City, and all of us are activists, but really co-founded and then been organizing ever since.
This is Austin. I wasn't a founder of One Struggle or an Alucha, but as I said, you know, as Ferguson became a personal issue to me, both academically, you know, and kind of pervaded my whole life, I've just been throwing my weight behind everything I can and just trying to be a utility person, just to help out, whether it's canvassing neighborhoods, promoting events, or, you know, having one-on-one conversations, helping set up forums, protests, whatever it may be. And I also work with the American Friends Service Committee and help as kind of a liaison between those two social justice organizations, or three, rather.
And this is Celia again, and co-founder with Una Lucha Casey. Just always been involved in the community, and I think this is a great way to really address issues that our community does not talk about.
So why are both organizations necessary here in Kansas City?
I think there's the myriad of reasons, particularly related to what's been going on with state-sponsored violence. One is the conversation wasn't happening here in Kansas City. A lot of people were thinking Ferguson is so far away, and people that don't live in Missouri were looking at us going, well, what's going on in Kansas City? And so really to be able to tie the connections to Ferguson, but then also talk about that we also have state-sponsored violence here in Kansas City, police profiling, police brutality, high rates of people being killed by the police, and then also related to just, profiling as far as, stops and drives and things like that. So I think, also too, in a young people movement, we definitely have many ages in this movement, but there was a void here of younger folks leading this way. And, we know that younger people are, often the victims of, and so just to be able to uplift communities that don't necessarily always have a voice.
And I'll speak specifically to our Latino community here in Kansas City. It's necessary because it doesn't exist. An organization and the mission that we have doesn't exist here in Kansas City. You know, you can find a handful of Latino-focused organizations, but who will actually, stand in front of the Mexican consulate and say, you're responsible? So that's not happening. And it really takes a group of brave people to start paving the way for others to feel not as alone. And I think that's, our Latino community needs this, because it's not happening, it hasn't happened. And it's a shame because, we do have a rich Latino history here in Kansas City. But unfortunately, some of it is just colors and pretty stuff and festivals and, we're not one-dimensional. There is so much more going on within our Latino community.
Right, and I want to sort of expound more on what state violence is, mm-hmm. but speaking of the Mexican consulate, I think Una Lucha has been directly challenging the consulate on a monthly basis by holding direct actions or vigils in front of the consulate. And why has that been happening?
Correct. So I want to say that maybe our first vigil was held, I want to say it was November. So we started November, December. And I'll be honest, I think one of the first times that we went out there, we had someone show up and say, all right, I'm here, I'm ready to go. I'm like, great. And they were like, what's your demands? We were like, demands? Okay, we were just upset at them. Like, this is how we thought we were going to make a difference. And so then it really, really has been a learning process for us to put into words, you know, what we're feeling and, you know, what the community is feeling. And so then we had some folks from Ayotzinapa come here to Kansas City in March. And, you know, as we're standing there in front of the Mexican consulate, one of the student survivors said, you know, what you can do, Kansas City, is keep our story alive. And we said, great, you know, we'll keep it alive. And we would be doing an absolute disservice to them, to our word, to our native countries, to say, oh, I'm tired now. So we've kept it up. This past May 26th, we did something a little bit different. Visibility is still very important, and we're still sharing the message. So we actually went out into the community, and we had great interactions with the community as they shared their thoughts about how important it is for the Mexican government to respond to this.
And that was a social media campaign?
So, yes, yeah, so that was a social media campaign. And mm-hmm. so then we're going to keep, you know, trying different things. We will still be present at the Mexican consulate because they do have a role in this.
So it seems like another connecting idea between the two organizations is addressing state-sponsored violence. Mm-hmm. What is state-sponsored violence for someone listening that doesn't know or isn't familiar with that term?
I'll try to address it in layman's terms, I suppose. I would say state-sponsored violence is violence that is either explicitly or implicitly supported by the dominant social structure, meaning that, you know, you can look at the rampant killings of young black males and females and all people of color, in fact, and as people have been protesting, there's been a shocking lack of indictments, as with Darren Wilson, as with Daniel Pantaleo in the case of Eric Garner. There seems to be a very suspicious sort of trend of these officers getting some form of exceptionalism they're supposed to uphold the law, but they apparently don't have to abide by it in many of these cases. So that's a brief description of how I might describe it.
Right. And how is that playing out in Mexico?
You know, I think, you know, he mentioned it the exact same way, a lot better than what I would say. But, you know, we're thinking about the indictments. I mean, specifically thinking about the Ayotzinapa, and it's not, you know, the first time it happens, it's not the last time, and I hate to say that, but it's not the last time. I think it'll happen for a very long time. But what they've done in Guerrero is that they have placed some charges on some low-end officials, but nothing has gone any further. There needs to be a response. I mean, just like, you know, here with, you know, the state-sponsored violence in the United States, you're looking for some sort of response, some action, some something from, you know, let's say even from the president, you know, and everything down, you know, down to your governors, and if there were something specific and those consequences that were to happen. But it's not happening in Mexico either. Mm-hmm. And it just continues to happen. The Mexican president is not responding to any of this. Specifically, one of the things that he said in Spanish was, get over it. There's been former presidents that have said, get over it.
Yeah, kind of the same thing we're hearing here with the Black Lives Matter movement. Is One Struggle connected to the larger movement?
I think, you know, particularly the work we're doing is there are national actions. There have been national calls to action. The most recent was Claim Malcolm X Day, and so which we claimed Malcolm X's birthday on May 19th, and we were out at 63rd and Paseo, and that was a national, actually an international day, a Black Lives Matter day. Martin Luther King is often given a holiday, but Malcolm X, actually, they had very similar politics that people don't want to recognize, and so we do want to talk about that these are national but also international movements. And there's been many actions that we've done that have been in a line with a larger movement, because this is a national conversation. It's not just Ferguson. It's not just New York. It's not just not Ohio. It's everywhere, particularly even here in Kansas City.
So you mentioned that one of the survivors of the massacre in Ayotzinapa, Mexico, came here to Kansas City to raise awareness, which is a form of transnational solidarity. Why is transnational solidarity? You mentioned, Diane, that that Black Lives Matter is a international movement. Why is transnational solidarity so important?
Well, specifically, you know, I'm going to come back to our Latino community. I'm going to come back to NAFTA. Okay, so when NAFTA happened, as a result of NAFTA, families were displaced. You know, economy changed in Mexico. So there was an influx of new immigration coming to the United States. Okay, so what happens outside of our country is definitely affecting our country. And I'm speaking like as far as the non-Latinos. They noticed a difference when the immigrants started coming into the U.S. Okay? So non-Latinos should pay attention and should be aware and involved because of things like that. As far as our Latino community, you know, we can't deny that there is a large undocumented community. And so then one thing that, you know, we really try to focus a lot on education with our community as well. And so then realizing that at any moment, you know, there can be some folks that are going to go back to Mexico. And even when we think of an undocumented person, that undocumented person is going to be attached to many documented people. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about separation of families and communities. So it's necessary because our families are on both sides. It's necessary because those who don't have families are still being affected.
So how is that being addressed by One Struggle?
I think one of the things we're particularly talking about is being real and talking about, you know, the racism that happens, right? That is very prevalent in our society and how we internalize that. And also, too, that there's discussions of, you know, particularly Black-Brown solidarity, there's a lot of animosity between the communities and not an understanding a lot of times of the reasons why communities are the way they are, why the influx of Latino folks into the United States, and a lot of Black folks feel like, well, they're taking our land, right? They're taking our space. Not understanding the policies that drove people away from their country, and then to be able to talk with particularly with Black folks in particular and have that discussion, like, do you understand that the same policies that affect Latino folks also affect Black people? And these policies have been used against us, and they're used against Latino folks and other immigrant communities. And at the end of the day, we're all fighting for these crumbs, right? And if we're much stronger, right, if we join forces. But at the end of the day, we're taught that we need to fight, right? That's the goal, right, is for us to fight. And so if we're just fighting amongst one another, we're not doing each other any good. But a lot of it's just consciousness, right, to understand history, to understand policy, because so much just has been taken away, particularly here in Kansas City. It's so hyper-segregated, right? It's still hyper-segregated. You know, you can go in many parts of this community and not see people that look like yourself. And, you know, it's diverse in many ways, but it's still so segregated.
Mm-hmm. So, hence the name One Struggle and Una Lucha, because all oppression is linked. So both of you mentioned that there's some raising of awareness, some education going on. How has that happened? Have there been programs or events that either organization has done to raise awareness? Or to educate the community?
Leading up to the visit from the families from Ayotzinapa, one of our talented members, Mariana, created a pretty unique documentary that covers a history of state-sponsored violence in Mexico. And so then we held that documentary screening, Olathe, KCK, Northeast Kansas City. And so then that's traveled a bit. And so then we're looking to continue those type of community presentations and education. But recently, so this May 26th, we were out in Northeast Kansas City on Independence Avenue at a popular Mexican grocery store. And we were able to have great one-on-one conversations with our community directly. And so then it's passing out those flyers, it's having a conversation and talking about those issues. Because one thing that we also know is that you can't expect people to just come to you. Mm-hmm. You have to go out to them. You have to go out to them on their terms. Because even though we do have what I think is an important message, if we're not willing to work with our community, if we're not willing to be a part of the community, mm-hmm. They're not going to be a part of this.
Mm-hmm. Has One Struggle had any education programs or events?
Yeah, we actually started this. We've done our third month. We're doing monthly meetings, public meetings that are open, obviously, to the public. They're the last Tuesday of the month, and they move around the city. So we've had it at St. Mark's Church on Troost. We had it at the Southeast Community Center. And so we're moving around just to really let people know what we're doing, but also to, like Celia said, to infuse ourselves within the community. So we often do flyers around the neighborhood community center that we're doing just to let people know that we are here, and we've only been around for 6 months. So I think, you know, part of that discussion, like Celia said, is to getting out in the streets and letting people know who we are. And then also, like, we have to build trust. Like, we're brand new. There's a lot of organizations here in the city. You know, there's you know, people might or might not have good relationship with the city, with those organizations. And I think, you know, part of it, like I said, is building trust. And so it's just continuing to engage in conversation and like Celia said, to meet people where they are.
What other programs or events has One Struggle done since its inception?
Yeah, our first big events that we did actually in December, we partnered with the Charlotte Street Foundation to do some community healing projects. Nedra Bonds, who's a local social justice crafter from KCK, she's a quilter, did a series called Craft Care and Justice, and she brought in a lot of organizations to talk about social justice issues. And we had two community healing events, and we brought in artists of color to particularly talk about how art heals ourselves on an individual base, but also as a tool for healing and to heal communities, and also to have conversations. Art is oftentimes a universal language, and, you know, if we speak and academics speak all the time, right, that's not going to do us any good, right? We need to be able to have many conversations and many languages, and so we did that. And then the second half was really just open to community to talk about how they have been grieving and hurt, and to be able to process about what's been going on. Because a lot of us, particularly if you're just kind of living on social media, you get burnt out, right? And to be able to connect with people one-on-one. So we did two of those, and we fortunately got some funding to be able to continue to do that. So we're going to do four more of those throughout the year, as well as two Black Lives Matter coloring books. It's another way to have discussions. Una Lucha created one for Ayotzinapa, and so we're going to continue that and also talk about immigration and Black-Brown unity. So many, many different tools in order to have discussions.
So I know both groups have engaged in direct action. What are some of the things? So what is direct action, first of all?
Yeah, I'll define all the terms this evening.
That's how you got involved.
Yeah, for sure. That is how I got involved. So direct action, I guess the most relatable thing would be a protest, which is a unified movement of people to either directly object to an issue, to a social issue, to a social problem. And that can be done with your voice and with your body. And, you know, there's various different forms of protest and direct action. There's regular protests where you might be on a sidewalk with a sign and, you know, participating in a chant or some sort of maybe an art display to symbolically communicate something. Or there's, of course, civil disobedience, and One Struggle and Unalucha have been had a hand in all these different forms of protests. So how many protests have we had now? At least four or five, and a couple of those, again, yes, were civil disobedience, and I was, that's how I got involved with One Struggle, was through an act of civil disobedience, and they were so kind to bail me out when that took a turn for the worse, so to speak, and yeah, I knew these were good folks. So.
Why is direct action important? Because I've been to some forums where One Struggle spoke, and it always seems to come up, the question about voter registration. Somebody mm-hmm. always asks, why don't you guys talk about voter registration? Mm-hmm. Why is direct action important, an important component of what you do?
Well, from my perspective, when you look at the oppression of people of color and also working class people, in most cases, you know, in the inner city and the urban community, every avenue for change has been exhausted, whether it be, you know, through the local government, through the state government. You know, they're doing what they can to exercise these options, but they're just simply not working. And with the exodus of jobs, of specifically blue collar jobs, you know, and in the dilapidated conditions of the city, they have nothing else. Nothing else to turn to. So it is necessary to put your body on the line sometimes and say, I literally cannot do this anymore. You know, I am being backed into a corner. And sometimes that's the only way your message can be communicated, you know, an act of disruption that disrupts other people's lives to raise awareness of a very concerning issue in the community that's hurting them.
Right. And so what are some direct actions that both groups have? I think, Celia, you mentioned that because I think confronting the Mexican government at the council is pretty direct. I'd say that constitutes direct action. What are some of the other things that people have gotten or that both groups have done?
Well, I'll say specifically, you know, protesting and doing some direct actions out at the Mexican consulate. As I mentioned earlier, we're in a different process, a different stage of the civil rights movement, human rights movement. You know, in Mexico, and I'm sure it happens here in the United States as well with the Black Lives Matter community, you know, the media shows one idea of what protests are. You know, we knew that from the very beginning that we also had to redefine what people consider to be direct action or protests, because it isn't those scary images that you see on TV. And it's not those violent, you know, people or things that we know TV makes things up. Mm-hmm. And so then, you know, so that's one layer. The second layer is for our Latino community to actually be in front and our Mexican community to be right in front of the Mexican consulate. It's really scary. So we are taking a very, you know, conscious approach and considering our Latino community before doing anything maybe a lot more riskier. Mm-hmm. So for the time being, our direct actions have been limited to being present at the Mexican consulate. And I think that would be it.
The biggest action that that One Struggle KC did was I just drew a blank on the park.
Parade Park.
Thank you, Parade Park. in December, and that was the park is located very near the highway, and so there was a rally there. There was a discussion, and then there was a highway shutdown, and KCPD was nice and did that for us. And so the action, though. There's very different levels, right? And so before we do our actions, we let people know, like, there could be a possibility for arrest. There won't be a possibility for it. If you don't want to get arrested, here's what to do. So we let people know. And also our other action that we did was, like I said, Claim Malcolm X Day. And that was a family day. We had a baby Malcolm out, 7-year-old, read a speech about Malcolm X, about women. So we engage many people in the community.
So we only have a couple minutes left. I want to let each group talk about some upcoming events that they have, that they may want to talk about.
Well, I want to say the public meeting, the next public meeting, and we'll probably have to look up that date. Or do you know the date, Diane?
I believe it's June 30th. It's the last Tuesday of the month. The location's to be determined. It's from 6 to 8 p.m., and we will post the information on our Facebook page, which is at One Struggle KC on Facebook. The other thing we're working on, we're collaborating with KC and Kansas City Anti-Violence Project about a series of town halls for the LGBTQ community, and we're finishing up our town hall series. The next one's actually going to be June 29th from 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. It's going to be interactions with law enforcement, and that's open to the community.
All right, well, I think we're out of time. Thank you guys so much for coming on today and talking about what you're doing here in Kansas City. I much respect and very necessary and much needed here in Kansas City. And thank you all for listening to Radioactive Magazine today.
You have been listening to Radioactive Magazine, a locally produced broadcast spotlighting social and political activists in our community. If you'd like more information or like to comment on this program, Call Bill Claus at 816-994-7869.